A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about Rumble, the video platform that's got this reputation as a fringe anything, goes community. Is that actually accurate, or does it have some independent value over more moderated places like YouTube? And I think the timing on this is interesting, because Rumble's market cap hit $2.1 billion in May after its cloud services deal with Trump Media and Technology Group expanded. And yet most people still picture it as a grainy video site for conspiracy theories.
That perception gap is exactly what makes this worth digging into, because the numbers tell a very different story than the reputation. Rumble Cloud now accounts for 62% of the company's $340 million in annual revenue as of Q1 2026. That's not a video platform with a side hustle. That's an infrastructure company that also runs a video site.
It's a hosting company wearing a YouTube costume, which, by the way, is a pretty good costume. The YouTube costume is expensive to make.
It is, and we'll get into why the infrastructure underneath that costume is actually the most interesting part of this story. But let's start at the beginning, because the origin story actually explains a lot about why the platform is the way it is. Chris Pavlovsky launched Rumble in 2013 in Toronto, and the original pitch had nothing to do with free speech or politics. It was a pure infrastructure play, cheaper hosting, faster transcoding, no content policing. The idea was, YouTube's ad revenue sharing was terrible for small creators, and their compression pipeline was expensive. Pavlovsky thought he could compete on the technical merits alone.
Which is almost charmingly naive in hindsight. I'll just build better pipes. As if the pipes were the problem. It's like opening a restaurant because you've got a really good oven and not realizing people also care about what comes out of the kitchen.
That's exactly the blind spot. And for a while, it sort of worked. Rumble grew modestly as a YouTube alternative for creators who wanted better monetization. We're talking small numbers, a few hundred thousand users, mostly people who'd run the math on their YouTube CPMs and realized they could do better elsewhere. Then 2020 happened. YouTube started aggressively removing election fraud claims and COVID-19 misinformation, and suddenly Rumble saw this massive surge of banned creators looking for a new home. By 2021, the company had explicitly rebranded as a free speech platform and raised $500 million in venture funding from investors, including Peter Thiel's Founders Fund.
The political identity wasn't the plan. It was more like the market found them. They built a better oven, and suddenly, the only people showing up to eat were the ones who'd been kicked out of every other restaurant in town.
And that's one of the misconceptions worth addressing right up front. People assume Rumble was founded as some kind of ideological project, a deliberate anti-YouTube. It wasn't. It was a hosting company that got drafted into the culture war.
Like adopting a feral cat. You think you're just putting out some food, and suddenly you've got an identity. And now you're the cat person. Whether you plan to be or not.
That's actually not a bad analogy. The cat just walked in, and now you're defined by it. So let's talk about what Rumble actually looks like under the hood, because the technical infrastructure is genuinely interesting, and I want to push back on this idea that it's just a shabbier YouTube. They use a decentralized content delivery network with edge nodes in 47 countries. Their claim is about 40% lower latency than YouTube for North American users. And since 2024, their video encoding pipeline supports the AV1 codec, which matches YouTube's quality but at roughly 30% lower bandwidth cost.
Okay, walk me through why AV1 matters. Because I hear codec, and my eyes glaze over.
AV1 is an open-source video compression standard developed by the Alliance for Open Media. Google, Amazon, Netflix, Microsoft, all the big players. The key thing is, it delivers the same visual quality as the older H.264 or VP9 codecs at a much smaller file size. So if you're Rumble, you can stream 4K video that looks identical to YouTube's 4K, but you're pushing about 30% less data to do it. That means lower bandwidth bills, faster load times, and better performance on slow connections.
On pure technical specs, it's not the bargain bin experience people imagine.
It's not. 4K at 60 frames per second with AV1. That's technical parity with YouTube. The perception of lower quality comes from the user-generated content, not the infrastructure. When someone uploads shaky phone footage of a school board meeting, it looks bad on any platform, but the pipes themselves are solid. And this is actually where a lot of the grainy conspiracy site stereotype falls apart. The infrastructure is better than most people's home internet connections can even take advantage of.
That's the infrastructure story. But who actually uses this platform, and what do they watch? Because the pipes might be great, but if the water coming through them is questionable, that's what people are going to judge.
Right, the content ecosystem. So Rumble's moderation philosophy is where things get complicated. Their terms of service prohibit illegal content, child exploitation, terrorism, copyright infringement, but they explicitly allow what they call controversial opinions and political speech that YouTube flags. They employ about 120 moderators. YouTube has over 20,000.
120 people moderating a platform of that scale. That's not a policy choice. That's a statement. That's like having 12 lifeguards for the entire coast of Florida.
It's a statement about what they think moderation should be. They rely on user reporting rather than proactive AI scanning. The algorithmic difference is also significant. Rumble's recommendation engine, which launched in 2023, defaults to a chronological feed rather than engagement-optimized ranking. So you see what was posted most recently, not what the algorithm thinks will keep you glued to the screen longest.
Which means the most inflammatory thing doesn't automatically rise to the top. That's actually a surprisingly thoughtful design choice for a platform with this reputation.
And that has real consequences. During the 2024 US election cycle, 14% of Rumble's top 100 videos were flagged by third-party fact-checkers, compared to 3% on YouTube. So the fringe content is definitely more present. But the chronological feed means viral misinformation spreads slower. There's no algorithmic accelerant. It's the difference between a campfire and a flamethrower. Both are fire, but one spreads a lot faster.
That 14% versus 3% comparison is doing a lot of work. Because you could read it as Rumble has nearly 5 times more questionable content, or you could read it as 86% of Rumble's most popular content passed fact-checker scrutiny. Both are true. Both are mathematically identical statements.
Both are true, and which one you emphasize probably says more about you than about the platform. Let me give you a concrete case study, because these percentages can feel abstract. There was a video in 2024. It got called the Dilly Meme, named after the guy who first posted it, that claimed FEMA was confiscating hurricane relief supplies in North Carolina and redirecting them to undocumented immigrants. It hit 8 million views on Rumble before fact-checkers debunked it. YouTube removed it within 4 hours. Rumble left it up for 11 days until a court order forced removal.
11 days is an eternity in information cycles. That video did its damage long before it came down. By day 3, half the people who were going to see it had already seen it, formed an opinion, and shared it somewhere else.
That's the core tension. Rumble's position is that the marketplace of ideas should sort these things out, that counter-speech and fact-checking should be the remedy, not removal. YouTube's position is that certain claims are so dangerous they need to be stopped before they spread. Both positions have philosophical merit, and both have real-world failure modes.
The Dilly Meme is a failure mode for Rumble. What's a failure mode for YouTube's approach? Because I don't want to let them off the hook here.
The Russell Brand case is instructive. YouTube demonetized his channel in 2024 following sexual assault allegations, which Brand denied and which didn't result in criminal charges, and also for what YouTube called creator responsibility violations around COVID content. His first 30 days on Rumble, 2.1 million views, $4,200 in ad revenue. On YouTube before demonetization, 12 million views per month, $28,000 per month. So he took a massive revenue hit migrating.
He still migrated
because on YouTube he was at zero. 100% demonetization versus a smaller but real revenue stream. And that's the calculus for a lot of creators. Rumble offers a 60-40 revenue split. Creator gets 60%, compared to YouTube's 55-45. Better percentage, but the ad pool is dramatically smaller. Top creators on Rumble earn about 80 cents to $1.20 CPM. On YouTube, it's $2.50 to $5.
You're getting a bigger slice of a much smaller pie. And the pie isn't just smaller, it's made of different ingredients. Who are the 340 advertisers on Rumble versus the 2 million on YouTube?
That's the question, isn't it? In 2025, Rumble had about 340 advertisers. YouTube had over 2 million. That's not a gap, that's a different universe. And the Rumble advertisers tend to be direct-to-consumer brands. Supplements, survival gear, precious metals, alternative health products. Companies that have already decided their customer base overlaps with Rumble's audience. You're not seeing Coca-Cola or Procter & Gamble buying pre-roll ads there.
This is the moderation paradox you mentioned earlier. The hands-off approach creates what you might call a ghettoization effect. Advertisers stay away because they don't want their brand next to the fringe content. That forces Rumble to cater to its core audience with lower CPMs and niche advertisers, which reinforces the fringe reputation, which keeps mainstream advertisers away. It's a doom loop.
It's a feedback loop, and Rumble is aware of this. That's why the cloud business is so strategically important. Rumble Cloud hosts video infrastructure for Truth Social, for Locals, for several European alt tech platforms. That revenue isn't dependent on advertising at all. It's pure infrastructure play. Back to the company's original DNA, they're charging for server space, bandwidth, and transcoding services, not for eyeballs on ads.
The cloud business is the escape hatch from the moderation paradox. It's the part of the company that doesn't care what content is being hosted, as long as someone's paying the hosting bill.
If 62% of your revenue comes from infrastructure services, you're less dependent on the ad revenue from controversial content. You can afford to be more selective about what runs on the video side. Or, alternatively, you can afford not to be. The cloud revenue gives you options.
That's an interesting fork in the road. Because we can afford to be more selective, and we can afford to keep doing what we're doing, lead to very different futures. One leads toward normalization, and maybe eventually, those Procter and Gamble ads. The other leads toward being the permanent home of the deplatformed.
The company hasn't clearly signaled which path it's taking. Their 2026 budget allocates $12 million to AI content detection. YouTube is spending $200 million. That $12 million figure suggests they're doing just enough to say they're doing something, but not enough to fundamentally change how the platform operates. It's a fig leaf budget.
Or it suggests they think the problem is smaller than their critics claim. 12 million might be proportional if you believe your platform doesn't have a systemic misinformation problem. If you think the 14% figure is acceptable, why would you spend more?
That's fair. And their transparency report from Q1 2026 showed 0.04% of videos removed for policy violations compared to YouTube's 1.2%. So either Rumble has dramatically less problematic content, or their definition of policy violation is dramatically narrower. Those are the only two mathematical possibilities.
I suspect we both know which one it is.
Almost certainly the definition. But let's address another misconception, because I think people flatten this story in unhelpful ways. Rumble is not entirely unmoderated. They do remove illegal content and copyright violations. You can't upload the new Marvel movie to Rumble and expect it to stay up. They just don't remove what they classify as controversial political speech. The line between controversial opinion and harmful misinformation is where all the fighting happens.
That line is inherently political. One person's misinformation is another person's suppressed truth. The platform is making a judgment call no matter what it does. The question is just where it draws the line. There's no neutral position. Even doing nothing is a choice with consequences.
And there's another misconception worth addressing, that Rumble is exclusively for far-right content. It's true that's a significant segment, probably the dominant segment in terms of viewership, but the platform hosts a wider range. They have a deal with the WWE for archival content. They've got independent journalists across the political spectrum. Glenn Greenwald is on there. They've got educational creators who left YouTube over monetization disputes that had nothing to do with politics. People making history documentaries or science content who got caught in YouTube's automated flagging system and couldn't get a human to review their case.
The WWE deal is an interesting signal. That's not fringe content. That's mainstream entertainment licensing. It suggests Rumble is at least attempting to diversify its content library beyond the political stuff. They're saying, hey, you can come here for wrestling and then maybe stick around for the news commentary.
Compare that approach with ODC, which uses the LBRY blockchain protocol for decentralized moderation. ODC basically said, we can't moderate this, so we'll build a system where nobody can. Content lives on a blockchain and nobody has the keys to remove it. Rumble chose a different path, centralized control with a light touch. They could moderate more aggressively if they wanted to. The fact that they don't is a choice, not a technical limitation.
Which is itself a form of moderation. Choosing not to act is still a choice. It's not the absence of a content policy. It's a content policy that says we allow almost everything.
And this is where the comparison to YouTube gets most interesting. YouTube's moderation regime is partly driven by advertiser pressure and partly by regulatory pressure, especially from the EU. The Digital Services Act is ramping up enforcement, and YouTube tightened its monetization policies in Q1 2026, demonetizing climate skepticism and COVID-19 origin debates specifically. Not removing the content, but making it unprofitable to produce.
YouTube is getting stricter at the exact moment Rumble is positioning itself as the anti-moderation alternative. That's not a coincidence. It's market segmentation. YouTube is moving upmarket toward brand safety, and Rumble is picking up the customers YouTube leaves behind.
Effective market segmentation at that. Every time YouTube tightens its policies, Rumble gets a new wave of creators who've been demonetized or removed. The platforms are in a kind of symbiotic relationship. YouTube defines the boundaries of acceptable speech, and Rumble absorbs whatever falls outside those boundaries. They need each other in a weird way.
It's the circulatory system of the internet's political content. YouTube is the heart, pumping content through the mainstream. Rumble is the lymphatic system, collecting whatever the main system rejects. And you need both for the organism to function, even if one of them is handling waste products.
That's a vivid image, and it raises the question, is there a viable middle ground? A platform that moderates more than Rumble but less than YouTube? Because, in theory, that should be the sweet spot. Enough moderation to keep advertisers comfortable, enough freedom to keep creators from feeling censored.
I'm skeptical. The economics push you toward one extreme or the other. If you moderate heavily, you get advertiser trust and higher CPMs. If you moderate lightly, you get creator loyalty from the demonetized and the deplatformed. The middle ground gets you the costs of moderation without the advertiser premium and the reputation of being restrictive without the free speech branding. It's the worst of both worlds.
There's some evidence for that. Look at what happened to platforms that tried to split the difference. Parler tried to be a lightly moderated Twitter alternative and got dropped by their infrastructure providers after January 6th. They couldn't maintain the middle ground because the political pressure was too intense. Amazon Web Services literally pulled the plug on their servers.
That's where Rumble's cloud business becomes not just a revenue stream, but an existential hedge. If Amazon Web Services or Google Cloud decided to stop hosting you, you'd be dead overnight. Your entire platform vanishes. But if you're your own infrastructure provider,
then you're much harder to deplatform. You can't be kicked off the internet if you are the internet, or at least the part of it that serves your content. And Rumble has already been through legal battles on this front. They filed an antitrust lawsuit against Google in 2021, alleging that Google's search algorithm was unfairly favoring YouTube and search results. The case highlighted how dependent video platforms are on discovery through Google search. If someone searches for a video and Google only shows YouTube results, does Rumble even exist for that user?
Did they win?
The case is still working its way through the courts, but it drew attention to a real structural problem. If Google owns both the dominant search engine and the dominant video platform, competitors are at a systematic disadvantage regardless of their technical quality. You could build a better YouTube tomorrow and nobody would find it because Google controls the front door to the internet.
That's the kind of structural issue that makes antitrust lawyers salivate and everyone else's eyes glaze over. But it matters. Discovery is everything. If you can't be found, you don't exist.
Let's talk about what this actually means for people using these platforms. Say I'm a creator who's worried about demonetization. Maybe I make political commentary or health content that goes against consensus, or I just cover controversial topics. What's the practical play?
I was about to ask you the same thing. What's the strategy?
Treat Rumble as insurance, not a primary income source. The revenue ceiling is significantly lower, We're talking about earning maybe a tenth of what you'd make on YouTube for the same view count. If you get a million views on YouTube, you might make $2,000 to $5,000. On Rumble, that same million views might get you $800 to $1,200. It's not nothing, but it's not a living for most people. But if your content is in a category that's at risk of demonetization, political commentary, health topics that deviate from consensus, anything that touches on controversial current events, having a Rumble presence means you're not starting from zero if YouTube pulls the plug. You've already got an audience there. You've already got a revenue stream, even if it's small.
It's a backup generator, not the main power grid. You hope you never need it, but if the lights go out on YouTube, you're not sitting in the dark.
What's the value proposition for someone who just wants to watch videos?
This is where it gets trickier. Rumble offers genuine diversity of opinion that you won't find on YouTube. There are perspectives there, including some I disagree with strongly, that simply don't exist on mainstream platforms. If you want to understand what the anti-vaccine movement actually believes, not just what mainstream media says they believe, you can find it on Rumble in its unfiltered form. But the lack of proactive fact-checking means you have to bring your own media literacy. Nobody's going to flag the false claims for you.
That's a real cognitive burden. Most people don't have the time or training to fact-check every video they watch. NewsGuard actually launched a Rumble-specific browser extension in March 2026 that can help with verification. It puts reliability ratings next to videos and articles. But that's a third-party solution to a platform problem.
It's a platform that demands more from its users. Higher effort, higher risk of encountering false information, but potentially higher reward in terms of exposure to different viewpoints. It's like the difference between swimming in a pool with a lifeguard and swimming in the ocean. The ocean is more dangerous, but it's also more representative of what's actually out there.
That's the independent value proposition. It's not that Rumble is better than YouTube, it's that it's different in ways that matter for certain use cases. If you're researching what people across the political spectrum actually believe, Rumble gives you a window that YouTube's moderation regime closes off. You can't understand the information ecosystem by only looking at the moderated parts of it.
Even if what you find in that window is sometimes deeply unpleasant, even if it makes you angry or uncomfortable or worried about your fellow citizens,
and that's the tension that doesn't have an easy resolution. The same policies that allow marginalized viewpoints, dissident voices from authoritarian countries, whistleblowers, people with heterodox scientific views, also allow content that most people would find objectionable or harmful. You can't have one without the other unless you're willing to make judgment calls about which content deserves protection, at which point you're doing moderation again, and we're back to the same debate about where to draw the line.
Which brings us back to Russell Brand. His content wasn't illegal. It wasn't even necessarily misinformation. YouTube demonetized him for policy violations that were about advertiser suitability, not truth or falsehood. They basically said, "We don't want our advertisers associated with this person." And he landed on Rumble and kept publishing. Is that a free speech success story or an advertiser-driven content homogenization failure?
It depends entirely on your framework. From a free expression standpoint, the fact that he could continue publishing somewhere is a success. The system worked. He was removed from one platform and found another. Speech wasn't suppressed, it was relocated. From a platform responsibility standpoint, YouTube made a business decision about what kind of content it wants to be associated with, and that's also legitimate. They're a private company. They get to decide who they do business with.
The problem is, when YouTube's decisions effectively become the speech regime for the entire internet, because there's no viable alternative. If YouTube is the only game in town for video, then their advertiser suitability decisions become de facto censorship, even if that's not the intent.
Which is the argument for Rumble's existence, even if you hate everything on it? Even if you think every video on the platform is garbage, the fact that it exists means YouTube doesn't have a total monopoly on video distribution.
Competition in content moderation is valuable for the same reason. Competition in anything is valuable. It prevents a single actor from having unchecked power over the information ecosystem. Even if you think Rumble's moderation choices are terrible, its existence constrains YouTube's choices. YouTube has to at least consider that if they tighten policies too much, they'll lose creators to Rumble. That's a real constraint.
that's probably the strongest case for the platform's independent value. Not that it's good, but that it's an alternative. Monopolies are bad even when the monopoly is benevolent. Competition is good even when the competitor is flawed.
Let me push on that a bit. I think there's a stronger case. Rumble's infrastructure, the decentralized CDN, the AV1 encoding pipeline, the edge node architecture, that's innovative. The cloud business isn't just a hedge, it's a real technical achievement. If Rumble eventually decouples its cloud services from its video platform entirely, it could become a neutral infrastructure provider that hosts content across the political spectrum without the moderation paradox. The video platform becomes just one client among many.
That's an interesting future. Rumble as the Akamai of the alt web, neutral pipes that anyone can use, with the video platform being just one application on top of that infrastructure. Truth. Social uses Rumble Cloud for video. Locals uses it. Why not a progressive media network? Why not a university lecture platform? The infrastructure doesn't care what content it's serving.
They're already moving in that direction. Hosting Truth, Social and Locals, and European alt tech platforms. That's infrastructure business, not content business. The question is whether regulatory pressure forces them to moderate at the infrastructure level. Because that's where this gets really complicated.
The EU is investigating Rumble under the Digital Services Act, right? Article 30, systemic risks. And that investigation could have enormous consequences. If the EU determines that infrastructure providers have moderation responsibilities, it would fundamentally change the cloud computing industry. Amazon Web Services, Google Cloud, Microsoft Azure, they'd all be on the hook for what their customers host. Every website, every app, every platform that runs on their servers would become their responsibility.
Which would be a radical expansion of platform liability, and probably not one the EU fully intends. I don't think the regulators have thought through what it means to say that the company providing server space is responsible for what someone uploads to a website hosted on that server.
But it's the logical endpoint of the argument that platforms are responsible for user content. If YouTube is responsible for what users upload, why isn't Rumble Cloud responsible for what Truth Social hosts? The chain of responsibility doesn't have a natural stopping point. You can always go one level deeper.
It's turtles all the way down, except the turtles are liability waivers. And at some point you hit the physical infrastructure, the data centers, the fiber optic cables, the power grid. Is the electric company responsible for what someone does with the electricity? It sounds absurd, but the logic of platform liability doesn't have a clear off-ramp.
This is why the Rumble story matters beyond the platform itself. It's a test case for how we think about infrastructure versus content, about neutrality versus responsibility, about competition versus safety. The decisions we make about Rumble, as regulators, as advertisers, as users, are going to shape the internet's architecture for the next decade. We're drawing the map right now.
To answer the original question, is Rumble's fringe anything? Go's reputation accurate?
The platform does host more fringe content than YouTube. The 14% versus 3% fact-checker flag rate tells that story clearly. And its moderation philosophy means that content stays up longer, sometimes long enough to do real damage, as the Dilly meme showed. But anything goes is an overstatement. Illegal content gets removed. Copyright violations get removed. The platform does have rules. What remains is a category of content that's controversial but not illegal, and that's where the disagreement lives. That's the gray zone.
The independent value.
First, technical infrastructure that's competitive with YouTube. The AV1 encoding, the decentralized CDN, the edge nodes. This isn't a toy. Second, a moderation philosophy that preserves content YouTube removes, which has value whether or not you agree with the content. Because it means no single company has absolute control over what video content exists on the internet. Third, and most importantly, competition in the platform market. Rumble's existence means YouTube can't be the sole arbiter of what video content is acceptable. That structural role matters even if you never visit the site.
None of which requires you to like what's on Rumble.
None of which requires you to like anything on Rumble. You can find the platform's content ecosystem toxic and still recognize its structural value. You can think the Dilly meme should have been removed in 4 hours instead of 11 days, and still think it's good that YouTube has a competitor. Those aren't contradictory positions, they're just different levels of analysis.
It's the free speech paradox in platform form. The test of your commitment to the principle isn't whether you defend speech you agree with. It's whether you defend the infrastructure that allows speech you hate. And that's hard. It's easy to be a free speech absolutist when the speech in question is something you support. It's much harder when it's something you find repugnant.
That's uncomfortable. It should be uncomfortable. If this were easy, we wouldn't need to have the conversation. We could all just agree and move on. The fact that it's uncomfortable is a sign that we're actually grappling with the real tensions here.
Where does this go? You mentioned the AI detection budget? 12 million versus YouTube's 200 million? That seems like a bet that synthetic content isn't going to be the crisis for Rumble that it might be for other platforms. Is that a strategic genius move, or just not caring?
Or it's a bet that Rumble's user base is more skeptical of AI detection systems in the first place. If your audience doesn't trust institutional fact-checkers, they're not going to trust AI content detection either. So why spend the money? You'd be investing in a system your users will ignore or actively distrust. It's not just wasted money, it might actually alienate your core audience.
Which creates a kind of accidental immunity to the synthetic content problem. If your users don't expect you to filter AI-generated video, you don't have a crisis when AI-generated video floods your platform. It's just more content. The thing that would be an existential threat to YouTube is just Tuesday on Rumble.
Whereas YouTube has a massive crisis on its hands if indistinguishable AI video becomes widespread. Their entire value proposition to advertisers is brand safety, and brand safety requires knowing what's real. If advertisers can't tell whether a video is genuine or generated, they pull their spending. YouTube's business model depends on the distinction between real and fake in a way that Rumble's doesn't.
In a perverse way, Rumble's fringe reputation is a strategic asset. Lower expectations mean lower vulnerability to certain kinds of disruption. The bar is so low that you can't really disappoint anyone.
The bar is on the floor, and that turns out to be a competitive advantage. If nobody expects you to solve the AI content problem, you don't have to spend money trying to solve it. You can just let it happen and see what emerges.
Which is either brilliant strategy or a happy accident. Given what we know about the company's origin as a pure infrastructure play, I'm leaning toward happy accident. I don't think anyone sat down in 2013 and said, "In 13 years, our low expectations will make us immune to the synthetic content crisis."
I think that's right. Pavlovsky didn't plan for any of this. He built better pipes, the market found a use for them that he didn't anticipate, and now he's running a $2 billion company that's at the center of the internet's biggest content moderation debates. He set out to compete on bandwidth costs and ended up in the middle of a global argument about free speech, platform responsibility, and the future of democracy.
The accidental culture warrior, the man who just wanted to build a better video compressor and accidentally became one of the most controversial figures in tech. There's probably a lesson in there about the internet and the unintended consequences, but I'm not sure what it is.
The lesson might be that infrastructure is never just infrastructure. The pipes always end up mattering for what flows through them.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1970s, Soviet biologists studying sharks in the Caspian Sea off Turkmenistan discovered that the fish's electroreception organs, the ampullae of Lorenzini, were sensitive enough to detect the tiny electrical fields generated by underwater telegraph cables, which meant Soviet naval communications were inadvertently broadcasting their presence to every shark within 100 meters. The sharks, of course, had no idea what they were sensing or why, but they definitely knew something was down there.
The Soviet Navy was essentially running a shark newsletter. This week in Naval Communications, brought to you by the Caspian shark population.
An unintended subscriber base. The sharks didn't ask for it, but they got the signal anyway. Which is actually a pretty good metaphor for how content moderation works. The signals you send affect audiences you didn't plan for.
This has been my Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you want more episodes like this one, you can find us at myweirdprompts.com, on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a review if you're enjoying the show. It helps other people find us.
If you've got a question like Daniel's, something you want us to dig into, send it our way. We're at questions@myweirdprompts.com. Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird promise, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.